Maybe you've heard this one, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. Coming back from D.C. at Lake Beauty Retreat this weekend, I'm feeling okay with the last part, a little short on the first part. So that particular saying has been attributed to Ben Franklin and others. There are other kinds of ones that talk about this. Here's another one. Give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish and you feed him for a lifetime. The idea behind that saying is that, you know, it's better to teach someone a lifelong skill than doing something for them. And there are those sayings that we understand, maybe we even use them, but sometimes we have no idea where they come from. Like, dead as a doornail. You know, that means that something's completely dead, right? What's a doornail? Anybody know for sure? Maybe there's a builder in here. A doornail. And why is it dead? I don't know. Do you guys know that? But we use that saying, don't we, from time to time. Or cool as a cucumber. You know, the saying, she was as cool as a cucumber as if nothing had happened. Well, why a cucumber? And when did cucumbers become so cool? I don't even like them. But I've used the saying. Each of these little sayings, they provide a meaning that fits a particular situation. There's a whole book in the Bible made up of sayings that provide us with easy-to-remember insights about life. And it's called the Book of Proverbs. And it's the primary book in this series of wisdom literature. And we're reading it this week in the Immersed Bible Reading Series, the book called Poets. So again, if you want to pick up a copy, there's several that just came in again. And you're welcome to grab one. If you want to give a donation, great. Or you can listen online to these as we go through this series. So what is the purpose of the book of Proverbs? Well, the ancient Israelites, they collected these wise sayings from people like King Solomon. You know, the Bible talks about King Solomon as being the wisest person who ever lived. People like Solomon collected all these sayings, and they're meant to guide people on the right course in life. So it could be maybe the first self-help book ever published. Though it contains more than just self-help, it actually shows us how to live the good life, but it also can show us who can help us. I was drawn to this book when I first read the Bible when I was younger for two reasons. I think back then, first because some of these sayings I had heard before. I'd actually heard my family say some of these short verses, some sayings. I'm not so sure they knew it came from the Bible. I didn't know it came from the Bible myself. The second reason I was drawn to this book is that the first few chapters actually are giving advice to young people. It's actually for young people to gain direction in life. And it talked about things that I was looking for, a path to follow, a way to get the things that I was looking to get in my life and did not know how to do that. So if we read the book of Proverbs, we kind of end up shooting for these right targets in life. It gives us direction and it shows us how to start. So as we look into the book, the first line says, these are the Proverbs of Solomon, David's son, king of Israel. And their purpose is to teach people wisdom and discipline, to help them understand the insights of the wise. Their purpose is to teach people to live disciplined and successful lives, to help them do what is right, just, and fair. So these proverbs will give insight to the simple, knowledge and discernment to the young. And if we jump ahead a few verses, then we hear this phrase, fear of the Lord is the foundation of true knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. So here's kind of the key to the book. You and I have to apply ourselves to seek out wisdom. We have to learn it. We have to ponder it. We have to be disciplined in applying it in our lives. And discipline assumes then that that's not our natural inclination. So wisdom is something that we have to seek and build into our lives and practice in our lives. Irma Landis, she shares this insight. She said, my friend's grandson, Sheldon, had made it clear he did not want to go to kindergarten. So his mother was prepared for the worst when he came home from his first day of school. So how did you enjoy kindergarten? She asked. Well, he admitted, I enjoyed it more than I wanted to. I think Proverbs are a little bit like that. You know, we can easily find that we enjoy them more than we wanted to, meaning that the wisdom, the insight that we gain from them, the practical understanding, is much more valuable than the effort we expend to get to understand and learn them. So, again, what are the Proverbs of the Bible? Well, they're short, memorable sayings that offer practical advice for good living. And they're wise sayings from the sages of the past. And we gain their wisdom by learning and applying them, the things that they've gleaned from practical life experiences down and down-to-earth advice. So as we read them, they're not poetic rhymes, sometimes like the Psalms are. Rather, they're these two-line compositions that the first line or the second line echoes the first, or it contrasts it or elaborates on it. For example, it says, "For wisdom is more profitable than silver," and then it goes on, "For her wages are better than gold." So we discover that the Proverbs point out two paths in life. And this is interesting, two paths. So the path of the wise or the path of the fool. Another way of saying that is the path of the righteous or the path of those following evil. So two paths. And what marks out those paths? Well, the first one, the path of the wise, Proverbs says this: "Joyful is the person who finds wisdom, the one who gains understanding. She, wisdom, offers you long life in her right hand and riches and honor in her left. She will guide you down delightful paths, and her ways are satisfying." So for those who are seeking wisdom, even more will be added. So it's associated with joy. You know, who doesn't want that, right, in our lives? Long life, riches, honor, satisfaction. So how do we get these? How do we develop these in our lives? Well, at the heart of wisdom is this biblical history of God's people. And this is what makes it different than other sayings or wisdom that we see in culture. So at the heart of God's people is this covenant relationship with God. And so at the heart of wisdom is God. God directs us to the best life possible, the life he created for us to live. So the path of the wise is rooted in a right relationship with God. Fear of the Lord, it says, is the foundation of wisdom. Knowledge of the Holy One results in good judgment. We see this repeated over and over and over again. You know, fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And it doesn't mean like being afraid of God. Here, fear of the Lord means reverence for God, or honor or respect or devotion to God. You know, we have something like that in our covenant sayings. It comes out of 1 Timothy 3:16 and 17. It says, "The scriptures, the Old and New Testament, are the only perfect rule for faith, doctrine, and conduct. They make us wise and give us the path to the real life, the good life God intends." So that's the first path. The path of the wise. So the second path is the path of the fool. So wisdom is enshrined in an understanding heart. Wisdom is not found among fools. So the application is kind of this: if you respect or if you reject discipline, you only harm yourself. But if you listen to correction, you grow in understanding. So Proverbs clearly describes these two versions of life, two paths that we follow. If you become wise, you will be the one to benefit. If you scorn wisdom, you will be the one to suffer. So we will benefit from one path, or we'll suffer down the other. So it's important then to describe, I think, what Proverbs are not. And this was something that caught me early on in my life. I wish someone would have pointed this out to me earlier. Proverbs are not absolute promises. In other words, things happen differently in different situations. There's always variables. Let me say that again. Proverbs are not absolute promises. So as you're reading some of these things and thinking, well, this isn't working out the way it says in here, well, it's not an absolute promise. We have to think of Proverbs a little differently. You know, life has variables. There's different examples. One that I've pondered, and when we look around, this is played out in the lives of Christian families over and over again. It's this particular one here. "Direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it." Or direct children in the way they should go, and when they get old, they will not depart from it. So that makes sense, right? We spend a lot of time on Christian formation and Christian education and going to retreats and sending people to camp and chick and kids and all that kind of stuff. That's very important. And in your lives and at home, you teach your children, you know, what's good and right, and that's all wonderful. But it isn't an absolute promise, meaning that sometimes kids go a different way than what they've been taught. Now, we hope that at some point, you know, that truth that we're all going to come around again. You know, I'm sure my parents have been praying all through my teenage years and early 20s, and, you know, something changed. God got a hold of me. So, but we see that we look at Proverbs kind of in the idea of, like, batting averages. You know, when somebody goes up to the plate to swing and hit the ball, you know, there's a few different things that can happen, right? They could swing, crack, hit it perfectly, and it could sail over the fence. Home run, right? But does that mean the next time they go up to bat, they're going to get a home run? Most likely not, right? And so they may strike out the next time, or they might get a base hit, or might go out, get out again. And at each individual bat, you know, we're not sure what the outcome is going to be. But when you look at a batting average, it tells you over time, you know, what to expect. So a player who strikes out doesn't then just throw away all of the skills and things that helps them to get there. No, they go back and put those things back into practice because they know that over time that the averages say, you know, those things are going to work out. And so that's how we look at Proverbs. They're these practical advice. It is kind of the way things are, the realities of life, that when we put them into practice, these are the general things that are going to happen. Does that help? Does that make sense? So we look at the Book of Wisdom, and we recognize that there are qualifications to Proverbs. They're not absolute promises. And we're going to look at those when we get into Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, some tough books about some of the exceptions to life. So they do, however, require some reflection and meditation. So sometimes these Proverbs are deeper than they appear, or they might even seem to conflict. So one example that I found in here of Proverbs is I always kind of wondered about is bribes. So we think about bribes and we think about them as what? Not so good, right? They're not something we should do. And it says that, basically, the wicked take secret bribes to pervert the course of justice. So when we understand this in terms of our current life and economy, you know, bribes are wrong. They kind of disrupt the fairness of free market and those kinds of things. We don't want to do bribes. They're illegal in our culture. But then Proverbs earlier, it says, a bribe is like a lucky charm. Whoever gives one will prosper. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Does that make it right then? Or is it just speaking about the reality of a bribe, you know, it can make someone prosper in, you know, the way things are. It's kind of the reality of why people do bribes, because it gets them a little advantage. So that could be true, but does it make it right? Not necessarily. Not quite sure. There's another one that talks a little bit about this. It says, giving a gift can open doors. It gives access to important people. Well, that must be true because the president, he gets a lot of gifts, right? And so those guys shaking some heads. So you know, those kinds of things are realities, but we have to put them into a deeper understanding of who we are as the people of God and what it says. In the end, you know, God says the evil will not prosper, the wise, the just will. So we're going to look at a quick summary of Proverbs then and move on to the application. So Proverbs are sayings to help develop wisdom and the right application of knowledge. So I'm going to spend the rest of the time on application, because reading Proverbs is just half of gaining wisdom. The other half is actually the discipline of putting it into action. So following the ways that lead to the best possible life. So I looked at five categories here of Proverbs, and the first one is success, often linked to financial success. So kind of this success versus a get rich. So a hard worker has plenty of food, but a person who chases fantasies has no sense. No sense. So one of those fantasies, I think, that we chase in our culture a little bit is lottery. And whether you play or not, that's up to you. But, when we think about the lottery, there's a great potential at the end of a lottery, right? I mean, you can come with a great windfall. And so if you're going to win the lottery, you got to spend a little money on tickets, right? So, what's a good amount of money to spend on a lottery ticket? Well, I don't know. I would think, off the top of my head, not saying that I do this, but I would think that $100 a week might be good. You know, if you're really after this, if you really want to win the lottery, I mean, you got to invest, right? So if you put $100 a week on lottery tickets, then, there's a good chance that someday, well, not a good chance, right? There's a chance that someday you're going to hit the big one. And when you do, wow, right? Think of all the things you can do. We've all thought about, well, what if I won the lottery? I'd give a lot of money to the church, right? And there'd be a lot left over for me. So, but then think about what's the ways of the wise? Well, if we were to take $100 a month and put that away and invest it, with the time value of money, and these are just real practical kinds of advice, that over the years, 20, 30, even 40 years from now, you actually will feel like you won the lottery because that'll become, in a sense, a windfall. Just by doing that discipline of investing. So what does the scripture actually say about that? Well, it says, wealth from get-rich-quick schemes disappears quickly. And it's amazing. The truth is that people that hit the lottery, they're often bankrupt within, several years. It doesn't make any sense, but it's true. Wealth from hard work grows over time. Well, yeah, that's right, isn't it? It's true. Another area where I learned kind of from Proverbs is it says, plans go wrong for lack of advice. Many advisors bring success. In the 80s when I was getting out of college and grew up on the farm and in the farm economy of that era, things were tough and there was a lot of suspicion. There was this successful person who I kind of hooked up with, and he had this philosophy that he taught me. He said, don't trust anybody. Oh, that's a great philosophy in life, isn't it? Not really. Didn't serve me. But don't trust anybody. He says, be your own boss. Be your own doctor. Be your own lawyer. They're just out to trick you and get your money anyway. Be your own advisor. Be your own planner. So I took that to heart, and I really thought I'm going to do the best I can in all these things and be my own person. The problem with that is, there's a whole lot of stuff I didn't know, right? And the Bible actually says, plans go wrong for lack of advice. Many advisors bring success. And I learned that, and I began to apply that. And now I have the attitude that I will, ask anybody I can to have help and learn the things I don't know. Woodrow Wilson, he was a president in the turn of the 20th century, he said, I use not only all the brains I have, but all I can borrow. It's probably good advice. Then Proverbs goes on to talk about, the value of working hard. And often it is repeated in the terms of being lazy, the opposite. He says, a lazy person is as bad as someone who destroys things. Well, that's quite an accusation, isn't it? But we think about the loss of potential from a person who doesn't apply themselves in the areas where they can work and the gifts that they have. It is almost like a loss, isn't it? It's like destroying something. Proverbs also says, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Those little ants that they just work hard. They just keep going. They don't stop. And they all have their job and their work and their community. And so there's something to be learned from applying ourselves in life. So practical advice. Another area is health. And kind of juxtaposed against lack of self-control. Proverbs 25 talks about, do you like honey? Don't eat too much or it'll make you sick. Well, that makes sense, doesn't it? If we eat too much, it's not a good thing. The idea here is moderation and God's path. In Proverbs it says, don't be impressed with your own wisdom. Instead, fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Then you will have healing for your body and strength for your bones. In other words, that God's path is a way of not only financial health and relational health, it's actually a way of physical health. Emotionally, it allows us for health. It says, a peaceful heart leads to a healthy body. Jealousy is like cancer to the bones. We see that sometimes difficulty in relationships can actually work out in poor health. And Proverbs 9, wisdom will multiply your days and add years to your life. So another category is speech, how we talk. It's a test of our wisdom. And we find this over and over. I have this idea, and I think this plays out in wisdom, but that when a person speaks language, it's not always about the best words you use, but when someone says the bomb, like every other word in their language, I think, wow, you must be more intelligent than that to pick another word. You know what I'm saying? It's not just offensive, it's just like there's more to language, and it really speaks about who we are, and it speaks about the wisdom that we have. So our words need to be honest, they need to be well chosen. One of those is telling the truth. The proverb writer, he says, telling lies about others is as harmful as hitting them with an axe, wounding them with a sword, or shooting them with a sharp arrow. You know, we think about murder, that's not right, but using that kind of language to harm or hurt somebody, that's not right either. It talks about maybe when we shouldn't keep talking. Too much talk leads to sin. Be sensible and keep your mouth shut. Another way it says, a truly wise person uses few words. A person with understanding is even-tempered. Even fools are thought wise when they keep silent. With their mouths shut, they seem intelligent. You know, James, he writes in the epistle, he says, be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. So the words of the godly encourage many, but fools are destroyed by their lack of common sense. So again, our words are can be used to build people up, and that makes sense. From Proverbs, from a wise mind comes wise speech. The words of the wise are persuasive. And then the proverb goes on to talk about being gentle and kind. Very familiar with what Jesus' language and teaching is. A gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. You know, causing arguments, causing conflicts with our words is just not the way of the wise. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and healthy to the body. Mr. Hampton, he describes a hectic day of running errands with his wife and son. As if the stress weren't enough, 4-year-old Christopher, he insisted on asking questions about everything, told me how to drive better, sang every song he knew. Finally, fed up with the incessant chatter, I made him an offer. Christopher, if you'll be quiet just for a few minutes, I'll give you a quarter. It worked. But when we stopped for lunch, I unknowingly began to harp on him. Christopher, sit up straight. Don't spill your drink. Don't talk with your mouth full. And finally, he said seriously, Dad, if you'll be quiet just for a few minutes, I'll give you a quarter. So it kind of works both ways. The next area is good relationships versus shady friendships. How does Proverbs and wisdom speak to our relationships? So the Proverbs of Solomon, he talks about kids and parents and those relationships. It says, a wise child brings joy to a father. A foolish child brings grief to a mother. Well, it's true. Our neighbors, how do we treat them? If you can help your neighbor now, don't say, come back tomorrow and then I'll help you. So it talks about helping when the time is right, when the need is there. I always appreciated Cheryl's dad. He offered us a lot of help growing when we were young in our marriage. And he would always say, I'm probably not going to leave you much inheritance, but I'll give you what I have right now. And I actually appreciated that. It is a sin to belittle one's neighbor. Blessed are those who help the poor. If you plan to do evil, you will be lost. If you plan to do good, you will receive unfailing love and faithfulness. So speaking well of your neighbor. And how do we treat the poor? Well, Proverbs speaks again about that. Those who oppress the poor insult their maker, but helping the poor honors him, honors God. A bowl of vegetables with someone you love is better than steak with someone you hate. Ever been at a meal when you're sitting across the table and you just, doesn't really matter what you're eating, does it? It's true. And enemies, when people's lives please the Lord, even their enemies are at peace with them. It's interesting. Jesus quoted this proverb in the New Testament. If your enemies are hungry, give them food to eat. If they're thirsty, give them water to drink. You'll heap burning coals of shame on their heads, and the Lord will reward you. Treat your enemies right. And friends, how do we treat our friends? Well, Proverbs has some things to say about that as well. A troublemaker plants seeds of strife. Gossip separates best of friends. Now, we know that. If we have ever said something that was told in confidence, that damages relationships. Love prospers when a fault is forgiven, but dwelling on it separates close friends. Part of friendship and part of living in relationship is forgiving one another. And a friend is always loyal, and a brother is born to help in a time of need. There's nothing like a good, close friend. And then spouses. The Bible speaks about that too. We have to understand this is in a cultural context where, husbands and wives were considered, little different roles. But this still applies, and I think we can just say both ways here. The man who finds a wife, the wife who finds a husband, finds a treasure, and he receives favor from the Lord. So, a good spouse, that's an amazing gift of God. It's better to live alone in the corner of an attic than with a quarrelsome spouse in a lovely home. It's probably true, right? Anybody ever slept on the couch? Just saying. Good reputation is the final category that we look at here. Missing out on flourishing life or having this good reputation, which is actually the way of life that God intends. So it says, choose a good reputation over great riches. Being held in high esteem is better than silver or gold. It's a good word in our culture today. Now that path to God, it represents this solid faith. From Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will show you the right path to take. Trust the Lord with your heart. In Proverbs 4, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. One of the pastors on the retreat, he was talking to our students, and he said he's convinced even more and more that what we believe determines what we do. What our faith is determines the actions that we take. And that's why this proverb is so directing us to guard our heart, because it's going to affect how we live our lives. And so there's two paths that Proverbs speaks about. The way of the godly that leads to life, and the path that does not lead to life. So what are we becoming? That's kind of the question. Are we wise learners or foolish failures? The emphasis is on the learning of wisdom by application, by discipline in our lives. And the proverb writer, he says, for those who fear the Lord are secure. He will be a refuge for their children. Fear of the Lord is a life-giving foundation. It offers escape from the snares of death. So the writer in the Immersed Bible series, in the commentary at the beginning of the chapter, they write this. The Creator intends for us to flourish in our life on earth. There is a way of wisdom rooted in deep respect and reverence for God himself that leads us to the good life. Now again, Proverbs aren't promises, but they are the path to good life. We are wise when we apply them into our lives and live, because ultimately it points us to God and to life in him. The name of the Lord is a strong fortress. The godly run to him and are safe. And the New Testament writer picks that up and says, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. So let's close there. Let's pray. God, thank you for your words of wisdom, for practical advice in living. And Lord, we need only to flip open the pages of your word to Proverbs and find all these things, Lord, that are going to direct us and help us and guide us in life, in relationships, in success, in following you. And so, Lord, help us be attentive to learning, but also to practicing. And Lord, as we do, may we draw even closer to you. And Lord, as we do, may we put our faith and trust in you and find life. In Jesus' name, amen.